soundtrack that's been regularly broadcast as far as the dementia issue is actually concerned televisually so far. And we still have a situation whereby, although there are over 500,000 people with dementia facing isolation this Christmas, something surely needs to be done with respect to that. To address this issue, we're delighted to be able to welcome the comedy legend in many ways, Richard McCourt, of course, one half of Dick and Dom. A good morning, Richard. How are you keeping?
Good morning.
And, of course, the equally legendary head of policy and public affairs, George McNamara from the Alzheimer's Society. How are you, George?
Good morning to you.
George, let's come to you first, if we can. I mean, I was quite shocked by these findings that 47% of those who suffer with dementia feel that people don't have time to include them at Christmas. I mean, at any time of the year, that's quite shocking. But at this time of the year in particular, I mean, is it a case of we still do not understand the problem with this condition and this illness?
Well, there's still a huge unacceptable stigma and low awareness around dementia, you know, especially around Christmas, when it's a time for families, friends and communities to get together, to enjoy things and to meet and to have fun. People with dementia are actually facing quite a significant amount of isolation in the region. And you know, actually, it doesn't have to be like that. And we know, for example, through our Dementia Friends programme, that a small bit of awareness, a bit of understanding of what it's like to live with dementia can make a huge difference. A huge difference enabling people with dementia to continue to do the things that everyone wants to enjoy in later life, such as going down to the local pub, going shopping, meeting friends. But often, this lifeline is taken away due to a low awareness.
We mentioned the Dementia Friends advert, obviously, which features the likes of Chris Martin, Amanda Holden, Pixie Lott, Sir Terry Pratchett and so on. Richard McCourt, you're in there as well, I believe. I'm fairly certain. If not, you should be. But, I mean, from your own perspective, Richard, you clearly, I mean, you've got personal experience of this this whole system, having cared for your mum, of course, from that point of view. I mean, presumably you would echo everything that George has just said.
Yeah, exactly. Sadly, my mum got dementia when she was very young, 58 years old. She passed away when she was 64. And Christmas was a very difficult time for us because mums are like the rock of the family. They're the ones that kind of do a lot of the Christmas shopping, send out the Christmas cards, cook the Christmas dinner. And these things stopped happening for us. So as a family, we had to take over the reins and start doing that and caring for it at the same time. So Christmas really is a difficult time for families that are looking after someone with dementia. And that's why the Dementia Friends Initiative is so great.
And just from the perspective of actually raising awareness, clearly from your own point of view, there are ways in which people can actually cope. It's not the end of the world. And I think because sometimes you get the sort of notion of the diagnosis that a loved one actually has dementia. You think, that's it, fine, best not speak about it. We'll just ignore them. We'll pretend they've gone. And that's probably the last thing you can actually do, or the last thing you should actually do, surely.
Yeah, you know, you've got to treat a person with dementia exactly the same as any one of us. You've got to be there for them, obviously, and care for them as much as you can. But you can still carry on with your everyday lives exactly the same as you always were. We used to take Mum everywhere with us. You know, I mean, one Christmas, we actually took her to New York. We put her on a plane and flew her over. And she was in the mid stages of dementia then. I don't think she quite knew what was going on, but she had an amazing time. So it just shows you can continue your everyday lives as normal.
I can say that I never quite knew what was going on with Dick and Dom in the bungalow. It didn't mean that I couldn't enjoy it. It was fantastic. I mean, it's a joyous thing there. And don't get me started on duvets, because that's a different line entirely.
Indeed.
Moving back to George, looking at some of the kind of things that we're looking to do, like the Alzheimer's Society are looking to do together with Public Health England. You're actually calling on organisations to join more than 30 businesses, including Barclays, Argos, Homebase, Lloyds Banking Group and MS, who are already helping to make this Christmas a dementia-friendly one. What are the key things with respect to that? Is it just a case of becoming dementia friends, or would you like to roll it out more and sort of look to what how these companies can actually help and provide both information and indeed useful sort of assistance?
Well, anyone can become a dementia friend, and it's really encouraging that the businesses and organisations right the way across the country are now signing up to with their staff to become dementia friendly. But what we want to do, and what we're seeing, is that this is just the first step. For example, we know many people working in these organisations have caring responsibilities for people with dementia, and providing that little bit of extra support enables them to care for their loved ones, but also to stay in work and employment as well. And I think there's a great social responsibility. Dementia is the biggest challenge of our time, and it's something which everyone has as a responsibility and also a role to improve the quality of life of people with dementia. And that's why, for example, today we've launched a guide which is on our website. It's just some basic tips of how best to support people at Christmas, both in the home and in the community.
DementiaFriends.org.uk is, of course, the go-to website, or indeed you can also check out Alzheimer's.org.uk. The helpline is actually there. Richard, are things improving from your own perspective? I mean, since obviously your own sad personal sort of loss and tragedy, I mean, do you think that there is a sense that campaigns like this certainly could only be of benefit to the whole issue, but are people gradually shifting in terms of the perspective that dementia is viewed within?
Oh, completely. I think the Alzheimer's Society have been doing some fantastic work. And Dementia Friends, there's now over 500,000 people that have signed up to this. And it's so easy to do as well. You just go to dementiafriends.org.uk. There's loads of tips and help on there, how you can support someone with dementia. There's a short video to watch. It's a very quick process. And then you can do your bit in the community as well.
Makes perfect sense in every sense of the word. So, final two questions for both of you fine gentlemen. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning? First of all, we'll go to George. Has it been okay for you, George?
It's been absolutely brilliant. I think the key thing for us is that everyone can be a dementia friend, and we encourage all your staff to do so as well.
Excellent. And Richard, the same line from your good self. Has it been okay for yourself too?
It's been fantastic. And remember, we don't do duvets.
Yes.
That's what you were talking about, wasn't it?
I thought, could I squeeze it in some way, shape or form? But suddenly, Richard McCourt, you've just made everybody in Lincoln have a much happier Christmas just with those words being uttered. Richard McCourt and George McNamara, many thanks indeed. We'll hopefully speak again soon. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Excellent. There we are, Richard McCourt and George McNamara talking about a very serious but nonetheless aspect of life that maybe we just need to also acknowledge is part of the whole human experience. Much as indeed the Siren Voices experience that's actually being held at the atrium in the University of Lincoln. That's the University of Lincoln, and not what I might have erroneously said was a different other place. Still the atrium, but the University of Lincoln. That's this evening, of course. And you can listen online via sirenonline.co.uk or indeed via Siren 107.3 FM, and it starts at 7 o'clock. But there's lots of good stuff happening before then. For instance, Dawn Harper is coming up very shortly after Il Divo. Fabulous, and a suitably important, substantial piece of music to introduce the legend that is Dr. Dawn Harper to the production. Dr. Dawn, how are you?
Well, I'm all the better for that introduction, Alex. Thank you.
We figured Il Divo would be a suitable sort of way to actually just approach the whole system, particularly as very much at the heart of the festive season. We spoke, of course, with Gabriella Peralta, our regular correspondent from Gibraltar, earlier about how she's having to cope with the sun at Christmas and all of those kind of issues from that point of view. And yet it would seem that from our perspective in the UK, where it can be damp, drizzly, patchy, light rain and things not so good, we are missing the sun in the winter months, are we not, Dawn?
Actually, it's a real problem, Alex, and I'm increasingly seeing people who are vitamin D deficient. Now, we've been lucky this year. We've had a super summer. But often we go into the winter and our vitamin D levels are not that great, and they go to their lowest between about January and March. And we know that having low vitamin D actually is associated with all sorts of things, not least, actually, we're seeing a rise in rickets in children in the UK. And I think also we all feel a bit miserable when it's dark and it's, you know, we're about to hit the winter solstice and the shortest day of the year, and I think people do miss that sunshine. Certainly my patients with affective disorder definitely hit a real down. And so there's a survey out today from British Airways Holidays which is looking at the fact that actually the average working adult in the UK today will only get about an hour and a half of sunlight exposure, and the winter sun in the UK is not enough to boost our level of vitamin D. Now, we get some vitamin D from our diet, from things like eggs and meat and oily fish, but most of our vitamin D comes from the action of sunlight on our skin. And so I'm here sort of talking about, actually, don't rule out the possibility of a winter sunshine break. It'll boost your mood, but it will also boost your vitamin D levels. And I think we've all become a little bit neurotic about sun exposure. Mm-hmm. We don't need a huge amount of sun. We only need 10 or 15 minutes without sun protection factor in order to boost our levels. But we do need some. So I'm saying to people, you know, don't cover your kids up all the time. Let them have 10 to 15 minutes in the sun, not to burn. I'm absolutely not advocating sunburn in any way, shape or form. Of course, after that time, it's very important that you cover particularly young children up because their skin is that much more vulnerable.
And much healthier, of course, than sun lamps, which we won't go into at this stage, but, you know, it's not good at all.
Exactly.
Please.
Go on holiday.
Yeah, precisely. Which is an ideal cue for our fantastic British Airways soul, Michael Johnson, to actually join us. Michael, good morning. You've got the details with respect to the destinations with the most sunshine, the destinations with the best temperatures, and indeed the predictions of the best places to go in 2015. Let's go with the best temperatures and the best sunshine, because, you know, clearly, I've always thought you can be a bit of a hostage to fortune. You say, yes, it's always going to be fantastic in so-and-so, you go, no, it's the monsoon. But where would your particular sort of suggestions be from the point of view of BA's destinations?
Well, certainly, if you're looking for sunshine and temperatures in the winter, you do have to go a little bit further than normal. Obviously, there are still some really good places to go around about in Europe. So if you're going down to Greece or down to Turkey or down to southern Spain, there are still some great places to go and get plenty of sunshine, or go to Malta. Malta's really popular for us at this time of year. But if you want to go a little bit further, then places such as Cape Town and down in Johannesburg, all of the Caribbean is doing very well for us at the moment, down in Rio and Dubai. Dubai is extremely good if you're looking just for long periods of sunshine, unfettered weather, and relaxing and sun. And as Dawn was saying, if you're in any way vitamin D deficient, then these are the sort of destinations you should be heading to.
D for Dubai. There we are. It's quite simple. So keep it on. What about Gibraltar? Because we have to mention it. We have a regular connection with that. I mean, they're complaining about the sun in Gibraltar. Is that a place that they actually say is worthwhile checking out as well?
And we've got a very good service to go down to Gibraltar, and it's very popular with UK customers. It's a really good destination. It's not particularly expensive, and of course, it gives you a great foothold going into the rest of Spain. And it's a perfect place for a winter break, especially if you're just going for a very short time, whether it's sort of 2-3 days. But it's a great point to leap off to the rest of Spain too.
Precisely. Although we won't talk about the border issues, because that's another talk for another tale entirely, but still.
Or
indeed the Barbary Apes. Back to Dawn, if we may. Dawn, do you get a chance to actually have a timeout? Because, I mean, there you are. You're doing this wonderful link with us. You're in a studio which I suspect is completely indoors. No sunshine working through in any way, shape or form. Chris Brooks obviously sensational, keeping you happy from that point of view. But do you get a chance to actually take a break with your own family over the winter months?
I'm a very much an outdoor girl, so I have a Labrador who needs walking every day, so I do get out and about. But you're right, actually, this year particularly has been so crazy busy. So I am actually taking a bit of my own medicine and going off on a winter sunshine break on Saturday.
Ah, you see, that's what we appreciate about you, Dawn. It's not just a case of walking the walk, it's talking the talk as well, or vice versa. It's fantastic. Looking at the best places to go in 2015, again, possibly a bit of a hostage to fortune, or always with predictions and so on, but Michael, I mean, any particular areas? I mean, would you sort of echo the ones you've just mentioned, Dubai, Johannesburg, and so on, or would you say no? It's time to actually check out the Arctic Circle.
Well, it's kind of interesting though, because if you look at places like Rio de Janeiro, for example, you've got the Olympics in 2016, but there's a lot of buzz around Rio, so we're seeing a lot of places. A lot of people are interested in Brazil. Hawaii is proving exceptionally popular. And Seattle, now Seattle, oddly enough, is being led by interest in movies. So the new Twin Peaks TV show is being filmed up there. 20 Shades of Grey, that's being filled up there. So oddly enough, we're seeing more and more bookings to places like Seattle. Dubai has got a huge new range of hotels, Singapore. Most of the destinations in the US are proving extremely popular in places like Austin, which now has a daily service from us. But there's a lot of short-haul destinations like Mykonos, Santorini, all the places that, you know, you can just go and relax. They're proving incredibly popular in places like Marrakesh too.
Michael, when we added you to the schedule this morning, I honestly didn't feel we'd actually be going into 20 Shades of Grey and Twin Peaks in the same sort of line as some, but, you know, what
it's
the hey?
Exactly.
It's the movie world, and the location report is fantastic. Dawn, it's been fabulous touching to your good self and your good self, Michael. The two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today? Has it worked for both of you?
Thank you for having us.
I mean, I'm tempted to say, has it brought a little bit of sunshine metaphorically into your lives? But maybe that might be over-egging the pudding, but what the heck. So I take it that we can hopefully connect with you both in 2015 and continue sort of the fabulous work that you do. Obviously, it is the legendary Dr. Dawn Harper and the soon-to-be equally legendary, I'm sure, Michael Johnson as well from British Airways. Will you both return?
We will.
Of course we will. Thank you.
Richie Sakamoto and Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. A movie which emerged in the 1980s and really wasn't about Christmas at all, only in an indirect sense. But what the hey, as promised, we go live now to Surrey to actually speak to our Surrey Gaelic correspondent, Emma Tinson. How are you, Emma?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you? Excellent.
Very good. Now, we've just been speaking clearly to Dawn Harper and Michael Johnson from British Airways and, of course, Embarrassing Bodies, respectively, or vice versa, about holiday destinations. Presumably, Surrey is just full of sunshine these days because you're back in the Surrey area, so it's shining consistently.
It's not quite sunshine,
no.
But we're getting there. A little bit cloudy.
as long as it's all part and parcel of the whole rich tapestry, that's the important thing. So you join us almost as the sort of final telephonic contributor to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. I say almost. We've still actually got to spell us through to Joseph Thompson, who will be speaking in a few moments. In fact, actually, we might squeeze that in, but exciting times. What have you made of the programme so far today?
It's very interesting. Oh. I really liked the Christmas jokes. Yeah. I liked the one about Jason Orange. That was quite funny.
Yeah, exactly. What would take that finding their stockings this Christmas? Well, they won't be getting an orange or a variation on that theme. £1,500 that actually raised. £1,500. Astounding.
Brilliant.
We'll run a few others past you in a few seconds. But as I say, Joseph Thompson from the British the Building Society Association, I should say, has got some interesting news about, obviously, the government's move to homes and building homes, etc. And the first question we actually put to Joseph was primarily, is it generally a season of good news when it comes to mortgages?
We are definitely heading in the right direction, and these measures are definitely welcomed. But there still is a big disparity between supply and demand for housing. And although stamp duty reforms are welcomed, it's going to help a few, but not many. And we really need more to be done in the housing market.
The early point, which suggested that over a quarter of consumers are cutting back on this year's Christmas spending to ensure they can pay their bills, there is that fear that we don't want to go into another boom-bust cycle, or indeed property bubble, or all those other sort of nightmares that obviously led to the financial troubles that many folk actually experienced firsthand.
You're exactly right. We don't want that. And the fact that households are cutting back on their Christmas spending really shows the pressures these households are facing. And that is why we really are asking for a minister at cabinet level who can address the real concerns that we have in the housing market. And rather than taking these small steps, we want something transformational to really help the housing crisis that we have in the UK.
And this BSA property tracker, again, quite an interesting line that suggests that if interest rates were to go up by one percentage point, which is generally regarded as what's likely to happen, I think, then more than one in ten borrowers would be forced to miss a payment on a bill. So it's a very tight line that with the Chancellor and indeed financial organisations are treading on this one.
That's right. It is a concern, but I wouldn't say that people should be too worried, because the Bank of England have told us that when interest rates do rise, that it will be a gradual rise. So it will be a while before we do reach that 1% increase. But if people are concerned, I would advise them to talk to their lenders early. Don't wait for the problem to set in. Really talk to your lender. And it may be appropriate to perhaps think about fixing your mortgage rate, which if you do at the moment when interest rates are very low, this can protect you from any future rise in mortgage rates.
The classic line of future-proofing. One of the key aspects, of course, is that, again, in times past, and I look at the last century here, people often used to borrow extensively against mortgages and so on. That's changed for understandable reasons now, but it does mean that for aspiring first-time buyers, and indeed second steppers as well, raising a deposit is rated as the biggest single barrier to ownership for the fourth year in a row.
That's right. Raising a deposit remains the biggest barrier to property purchase, as it has done for a long time. And, you know, again, this really does show the impact of the disparity between supply and demand. We need more houses in the housing market, so there isn't this pressure, this upward pressure on house prices.
Spoke about, obviously, our friends in Europe who tend to like to rent. But that's not necessarily a solution because, again, looking at the sort of facts here, average rent for new tenants is rising by 7.5% in the last year alone. So, again, is it down to that notion of, well, we're just not building enough homes and it's a buyer's market or a seller's market?
Well, I believe so. I believe it is due to the lack of housing. And that is why we really are calling for a housing minister that can address not, you know, house prices, but people who rent as well, the problems that they're also facing. We need more houses built in the areas where people want to live, where there are jobs, and that's why we really need a minister at cabinet level that can address all these issues at the highest level.
Politically, we've heard various lines saying that, oh, it's the media and actually sort of generating scare stories about, oh, we're doomed and so on. From your own perspective, Joe, as an economics data specialist at Thomson Reuters before obviously joining the Building Societies Association, as the business economist, is it a case of we don't just need to hold our nerve, but we also need to be a little bit brave and actually sort of ensure that things won't literally collapse around our ears, which sometimes it seems that some of our stories seem to suggest is going to happen?
We do need to hold our nerve, but I mean, what the property tracker results have shown is that people see the housing market as actually quite stable at the moment. They're not fearful of a big boom and bust. The respondents to the survey have said that, you know, they think conditions are stable, prices are not going to fall, and, you know, probably see a more modest rise in house prices over the next year. People have said they expect prices to rise about 3% over the coming year, which is in line with other forecasters in the market at the moment. So I think we're in a relatively stable position, but we do have to be careful and keep an eye out for any future problems that may occur in the economy.
And briefly looking at the sort of regional aspects of the whole system and sector, I mean, clearly we heard tales a few years ago that in Hartlepool, for instance, you could buy a whole street for what would take a sort of broom cupboard in London. You know, are we still seeing that huge variation between north and south in the kind of classic north-south divide?
There is some variation, and, you know, I think it's quite well known that in London and the South East, house prices have been rising quite fast relative to the rest of the country. So there definitely is some disparity. And actually, in London, over half of people said they would have to cut back on their Christmas spending this year, which is higher than anywhere else in the country, which you would expect as there's probably the greatest pressure on house prices and rents in the capital.
Sure. And finally, the BSA, as we mentioned, calling for housing to be treated as a priority alongside health and education. Maybe it's worth noting, actually, Joseph, that in terms of the Building Societies Association, if you've got a decent home, then that can often sort of help both health and education, really. So perhaps it's a kind of complementary rather than a competitive aspect there.
Well, exactly. I mean, it all links up, you know. Housing encompasses so much more than just building houses. There's infrastructure, jobs, and healthcare. You know, we everything joins up, and that's why we need someone at the highest level that can interact with other departments in the government and make the changes that we really need.
I think the campaign definitely starts here. Joseph has been fantastic, touching base with a good self. I do like the notion of somebody who's an ace economist who likes playing the drums and basketball, basketball. Is it at the same time? Do you do both drums and basketball? Because that could be a whole new sport.
That could be a whole new sport. I don't think I'll be the one pioneering it, though.
There we are. And hopefully we've set aside the spectre of a giant lizard manufacturing itself, which I know is a little nod in the direction of one of our ace producers there, Rachel. But we've got two final questions from your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you, Joseph?
Oh, it's been great for me. Thank
you.
Yeah, thank you
excellent.
For having me.
I thought the giant lizard had cropped in there for a moment. It's all right. It's an ongoing line. Can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future, possibly in 2015?
Of course you can. Yeah, it'd be a pleasure.
And indeed, as Rachel Abbott would have said.
Do you think you had a big lizard in there or something really unusual? You know how people seem to have the most unusual pets these days?
So, Emma Timpson, have you got a big lizard somewhere in Surrey going around the whole issue? Because that could affect property prices no end.
Yeah, not that I know of.
You
if
never
there
know.
Was, I think I would have spotted it by now.
Well, it could be like Bigfoot. Bigfoot of the Surrey area, except it's a giant lizard. Or as Natalie Tuck might well have said.
Ooh.
It's been our little festive midweek drive morning edition. If you're wondering what happened to Sophie Grayson, she said she'd be back with us this morning. I think it's because her flatmates were making her Christmas dinner last night. That was fatal. We were worried when she went off there, and who knows what could have actually happened. If you don't cook that turkey properly, or chicken, could create all sorts of problems and challenges. Anyway, a reminder, of course, this evening, sadly without Emma Tinson, unless she actually gets on the train rapidly to get up for the Siren Voices Choir Christmas concert that's taking place at the University of Lincoln atrium, 7 o'clock through to 8 this evening. But you can listen live on air if you wish to, Emma, so that's one way which you can still feel part of the whole thing. And I can also reveal that due to a bonus sequence after the news at 10 o'clock, Emma Tinson will be on air again, because it's going to be a special run of Sound and Nick's Vision, as well as our Christmas Eve scenario. Sound and Nick's Vision will also be appearing. So you see, you can just go to the computer and say, Lord, I was darn good on that show. I helped rock photographer Nick Elliott through so many things there. And, you know, without myself and Sue Rice, just wouldn't have been the same at all. We started off with Christmas in Gibraltar from Gabriella Peralta, and went obviously via Richard Fitzwilliams and his very compacted view of 2014 in the movies. Ian Lennox, of course, with us. Melanie Gower, inspirational writer. Richard McCourt, and of course Dawn Harper from Embarrassing Bodies, and Michael Johnson from British Airwaves, followed of course by, we've just heard from Joseph Thompson and Bruce Dessau. So a fairly packed show, Emma. I'm sure you sort of agree. What sort of things are you looking forward to over the festive season? I personally would be marking essays, so that's always good.
Oh, that's good, yeah. No, this week I've been doing some more assignments. I've got some more work for university
good.
To do.
Yep.
But yesterday I actually went up to London for the day.
Ooh!
I know, lovely. I went to see the Hobbit film.
Yes.
So I'm now disagreeing with Richard's review a little bit.
Controversy as we head into 2015.
I know.
That. Emma, we'll hopefully catch up with you. Well, actually, we won't see you at the London Boat Show because you won't actually be sort of around then. I don't know.
No, I'll be on holiday.
You'll be on holiday. Yeah, fair enough. Leaving the country in somewhere where there's sunshine?
Yes, I'm going to the Canary Islands.
Oh, there we are then. But we will see you in 2015. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show today? Or has it been, in the words of Gabriella Peralta, Happy Panda or Sad Panda?
It's been Happy Panda.
Oh! As Mike Dooley would say, it's not knowing what the answer or solution is, but simply knowing that there is one which brings it forth. From all of us on the Midweek Drive team, Midweek Drive Morning Edition and Midweek Drive, we wish you a very happy Christmas on Siren 107.3 FM and beyond. You can always listen to the podcast as well. That's it. We're out with Perry Como. Up next, of course, Sound and Nick's Vision, plus heaps of good stuff as Siren proceeds through the day. Emma Tinson, would you like to say those final two words, Happy Christmas, or anything else you'd like to sort of utter at this moment? Off you go, Emma, the floor is yours.
Have a very happy Christmas and a happy new year.
Watch me now, here I go. All I need's a little snow. Starts me off, sets the theme, helps me dream my Christmas dream. Every year I dream it, hoping things will change and into the crying.